When the renowned Jewish scholar Salomon Schechter first laid eyes on the greasy, dirty scraps of paper his friends had brought back from a trip to Egypt in 1896, they probably struck him as being of little to no importance. However, he soon discovered that they contained a treasure, an important and previously missing Hebrew document from the 2nd century BCE. Little did Schechter know that this piece of trash would lead him to uncover one of the world's most valuable sources of Jewish writing, essentially an ancient paper trash deposit now known as the Cairo Geniza. Adina Hoffman and Peter Cole tell the story of this remarkable discovery and how it has changed our understanding of Jewish life and of global history in Sacred Trash, The Lost and Found World of the Cairo Geniza. It's published by Schachman Books, and I'm very pleased to welcome Adina and Peter to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
Nice to be here. Both of you have writing careers of your own, but you're also a married couple, aren't you?
We are.
Is this your first professional collaboration?
Not completely, in the sense it's the first time we've published anything under our own our names collectively, but we have lived together for over 20 years, and we have basically worked together on all kinds of projects. We show each other our work. We're intimately involved in each other's writing, and we also have edited books together, and so it's really, we were used to working together.
Well, you're both poets, among other things.
He's actually the poet.
Well, the Cairo Geniza research has unearthed some extremely important poetry. Is that how you even got involved in this?
We did approach it initially. I came to it through poetry. I translate Hebrew poetry from medieval Spain. And a lot of those important texts from that period come from the Geniza, or certain key texts. So the Geniza was sort of in my mind, but I wasn't really all that obsessed with it. But a few years ago, Adina and I paid a visit to the Geniza unit at Cambridge University.
Which is where today most of the manuscripts are held. Not most, but about 70% of the manuscripts are held there. They were taken by Salomon Schechter out of Cairo and brought to Cambridge. So,
right. And we were given a tour of the manuscripts, which are held two aisles down from the Charles Darwin papers. And it really just kind of floored us. And I ended up writing a long poem about this. It was titled for my last book of poems, Things on Which I've Stumbled. And then...
I think it's important to say, I mean, there's certainly a huge amount of just wonderful poetry, but there are all kinds of other things. And so my own interest as a biographer in archives and the daily lives of all kinds of people are also there. It holds something for everyone.
Well, let's back up, Adina. Yeah. What is a Geniza?
Oh, what is a Geniza? A Geniza, it's a barely translatable Hebrew word, actually, that kind of holds within it an ultimate statement about the worth of words in Jewish life. What do I mean by that? Basically, since the time of the Talmud, there has been this notion of needing to give texts that are either defaced or worn out or even heretical works to give them a kind of proper burial. I mean, the notion is really that words, like people, have souls. And so in traditional Judaism, one treats these kind of problematic texts.
Religious texts, to
the process of Geniza. Eventually, with time, that turned into a place. So there is a Geniza, is a holding place for these items. Sometimes they're buried. Sometimes they're put in a kind of special closet. And in the case of the Cairo Geniza, which is what we write about in the book, this particular community in old Cairo in Fustat actually saved not just religious texts, but every piece of paper that the society wrote for almost 1,000 years. So you have everything. You have all kinds of letters and business documents and wills and marriage contracts, everything that they wrote.
So this sounds a bit like a Collier Brothers tradition. Instead of just throwing stuff out, you keep it in some repository with no idea of it ever being considered important in the future.
And that's really important, is that this was not an archive. These things were simply being shown respect and protected from degradation, but the idea wasn't that they would ever be used again.
Right.
Are there other Genizot that are of equal importance?
The short answer is no, and that's also mysterious why it is that nothing else has turned up. But it's clear that there were, even in old Cairo, during the 18th and 19th centuries, there were reports of, you know, more than one Geniza in Cairo. And there was also we know of at least one other Geniza in Cairo where important things were taken from.
But really the answer is no. There's nothing comparable in terms of the range of documents and the fact that you could really reconstruct an entire civilization based on these documents.
When do they date back to?
Well, I mean, there are texts as early as, the 8th or 9th century. Most of the classical period of the Geniza is really mid it's late 10th through mid 13th century, but there are documents that are older than that, and there are documents that stretch all the way up into the 19th century.
And it's important that they're kind of like old and worn and no longer considered useful?
Well, there were several principles. One is there was no need for them to be in circulation anymore. Either they were defective, or if they were religious, the texts were worn out, so they were put in this place. There are some theories that it was a kind of, almost like a recycling bin. They were just dumped when they couldn't use paper anymore. You would just put it in this place to be safe.
So it wasn't just religious documents, but as you say, letters, legal documents, everything that was on paper.
Absolutely. Right.
For how many years?
4,000 years.
Yeah. No, it's quite
remarkable. People knew, hey, let's throw it in the Geniza. We just used up another piece of paper.
Presumably they weren't taking it in piece by piece. I mean, it seems that they probably would go dump things by the sort of barrel full occasionally.
The practice of Geniza continues today in religious communities. Next to a Xerox machine in Jerusalem where we live, people who are Xeroxing religious texts, if it is a defective Xerox, they don't throw it in the waste paper basket. They put it in a special box for Geniza, and every once in a while the stuff is buried.
Now, could they have thrown anything in, or did it have to be written in Hebrew?
In fact, there are things in all kinds of languages. And, I mean, one of the theories, and it's amazing actually just given how much scholarly work has been done with these materials over the years, how there are certain basic questions that really haven't been answered. And one of those questions has to do with what was the organizing principle? Why did these particular items end up in the Geniza? And one of the theories, and I think probably the most convincing theory, is that the Hebrew letter itself was somehow holy and required Geniza. But that doesn't just mean the Hebrew language. It means anything written in Hebrew letters, which is to say, and this is critical, Judeo-Arabic is a key language in this whole constellation. And Judeo-Arabic is basically the Arabic language written in Hebrew characters. It's sort of the Yiddish of the East. And this was the lingua franca.
Different than Ladino?
It's Arabic. It is basically Arabic written in Hebrew letters. And this was the lingua franca of the Jews of this particular community. They were completely Arabized. But it wasn't just that. There's also Judeo-Greek, and there's Yiddish.
Say also
there's
actually Yiddish. The oldest, the earliest extant Yiddish documents come from the Cairo Geniza, which is another incredible story.
Now, where were they in Cairo? They were in a synagogue?
They were in a synagogue. They were in Fustat is the oldest part of Cairo. It's actually now sort of a part of Cairo proper, but it was originally a separate place to the south. And the synagogue is now known as the Ben Ezra Synagogue. It was the synagogue of the Palestinian Jewish community of this this part of town, which is to say Jews descended from people who'd come from Palestine or the land of Israel. And it was in upstairs, kind of very unobtrusive. It's behind a wall in the women's section. And now you can, basically there's a hole in the wall. And through that hole,
That's where they were burying them, inside the walls of the synagogue. When Solomon Schechter first saw the synagogue, didn't he describe it as a battlefield of books?
He did, and he has an incredible essay called A Horde of Hebrew Manuscripts, where it was this marvelous description of the way, 1,000 years of detritus, basically literary detritus, are jammed together in all kinds of clumps, and so you have, a rationalistic work stuck to a magical amulet, stuck to an IOU, stuck to
a love letter.
And all this, and he actually, some people say he's the person who discovered the Geniza. He actually didn't. People knew that the Geniza was there, including Heinrich Heine's great uncle. They'd been there. But he's the one who had the sort of visionary imagination to understand what this contained.
But some people must have been aware of the fact that just because these documents were so old, there was some historic should be some historic interest in it. But weren't there legends about a serpent that might prevent you from taking the documents out?
That serpent was actually very he did his work. He kept people from picking it apart over the years. What happened was really in 1890, the synagogue was renovated, or it seems actually rebuilt. And in the course of that, they actually emptied out the Geniza, and they put all the stuff in the courtyard in these piles. And it seems that various manuscript dealers began to pluck stuff off. And it's really because of that, the fact that things started to trickle out onto the market, because exactly as you say, they understood that there was something of value there. And value is something that comes back repeatedly in the story of the Geniza. What is it that one, community values or certain scholars value? And what is it that they consider trash? I mean, obviously, one man's trash is, someone else's treasure.
But as you point out, some of these documents had already trickled out of the Geniza, so people must have been aware that something exciting was there. I'm talking with Adina Hoffman and Peter Cole. Their book, Sacred Trash, The Lost and Found World of the Cairo Geniza, which is published by Schocken Books. And this repository has been nicknamed the Living Sea Scrolls.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. That was a coinage by S.D. Goitein, who's one of the really remarkable scholars who have dealt with this material. And he was very self-consciously called it Living Sea Scrolls because everybody knows about the Dead Sea Scrolls, despite the fact, or maybe because of the fact, that as it's normally conceived of, the Dead Sea Scrolls emerged from a sect that was trying to escape from the world as it was.
Basically a small group of fanatics.
Fanatics in the desert. Whereas the documents of the Cairo Geniza completely reflect and embody the world as it was.
Well, that's not for a fringe group, but for the vast majority of the Jews of the Middle Ages who were, and this is again to come back to this notion of Judeo-Arabic, these were 90% of the world's Jews during this period lived in the East and eventually under the rule of Islam. So that, you know, this kind of notion of Jewish history as a straight shot from the Bible to the shtetl to the Lower East Side, this is not that at all. It's really very much a world of Arabic-speaking Jews who were not living in a ghetto. They were part of a community that included Muslims and Christians and others, and they interacted constantly.
But I would have imagined it would have been in Alexandria. Was Cairo a more important place? Because we have documents here that's from all over the world, as you mentioned, and even one piece of paper written in Chinese.
Yes.
We do, yes. Well, Fustat was the most prosperous Jew. Fustat is old Cairo on the Nile.
It was the equivalent of the ghetto in Italy?
Wasn't a ghetto, though.
And it wasn't just a Jewish town at all. Fustat was a teeming metropolis. It was actually full of all kinds of people, people coming from all over the world and people seeking their fortune and fleeing persecution. But it was
the largest and most prosperous Jewish community in the world at the time. So everybody was passing through, and it was at the heart of the Mediterranean trade routes extending from Spain to Yemen and to India. That was really the hub of the Mediterranean at the time.
You mentioned that some of the documents had already gotten out, and hadn't some of them appeared at the 1893 Columbian Exposition in Chicago?
Well, actually, the documents themselves didn't appear there, but the man who was responsible for it, they had this incredible pavilion at the World's Fair, a street in Cairo, in which they had completely reconstructed a street in Cairo. And the man who was responsible for doing the research on that was someone named Cyrus Adler, who had gone to Egypt in the early 1890s and had actually bought a few scraps, which he didn't recognize as Geniza documents, but he knew that they were old. And he showed them to his friend Solomon Schechter, who at that point may or may not have understood where they came from.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is that people did know that the Geniza was there, but they didn't value what was emerging from it.
So how valuable is the material there? We start off by talking about the poetry.
Yeah.
How old is the poetry?
The poetry, well, some of the greatest poetry goes back, well, the Book of Ben Sira goes back to the 2nd century CE, and that had been missing for 1,000 years. The original Hebrew of that had been missing for 1,000 years.
People knew that it existed but didn't know where it was?
They knew that it existed, although there was some controversy as to actually whether there ever was an original Hebrew. It survives in Greek translation. But some of the most important poetry goes back to the 6th, 5th, 6th, 7th century CE. There's one poet named Jannai, an incredible story. A poem of his is actually recited on Passover in the Haggadah, and only one poem of his was known before the papers of the Geniza were gone through. And because of the Geniza, we now have 800 poems by this man who's considered a legend in the history of Hebrew poetry.
Now, Ben Sira was the document that got Schechter excited about what might be in the Geniza, but did he have to go through every document? And what was that like? I'd imagine it didn't smell all that good because... It stank,
but he literally followed his nose.
He followed
his Geniza schmutz, isn't
well,
it?
Well, one of the amazing things about Schechter is really this incredible visionary imagination that he had. And it seems clear that although he went in search of Ben Sira on this secret mission to Cairo to try to get more Ben Sira, as soon as he saw what was in that room, he understood that he actually needed to get that it was about much more than that one book and that he was going to have to get as much of it as he could and bring it back to Cambridge. And he also understood that it wasn't going to be the work of one man, that it was going to take generations of scholars to work through it. And in fact, much of what we write, I mean, we write about a lot of the actual manuscripts in the book, but we also spend a lot of time writing about the scholars who were responsible for, not just for discovering it or for bringing it back, but also for unpacking it and deciphering it and making sense of it over the generations.
Some of the stuff, as we said, is literature. Some of it, I imagine, is more of interest to just historians.
Well,
historians, yeah. Linguists, pretty much every field of Jewish studies is, there's something for every kind of scholar in the Geniza. And scholars, we should say, are still going through it. There are, all told, over 300,000 fragments that came back. And most of them have not yet been really gone through in a, you know, in a rigorous fashion.
Peter mentioned S.D. Guettine before, the one who coined this phrase, the Living Sea Scrolls. And Guettine was responsible for an incredible undertaking, a magnum opus called The Mediterranean Society, some six volumes, in which he attempts to map the entire region based on the documents of the Geniza. And he talks about, I mean, it's just amazing in its scope. He talks about everything from, you know, the medieval Mediterranean postal service to how they handed out free bread to the poor of Fustat on Tuesdays and Fridays to, you know, attitudes toward homosexuality and all the different beautiful pieces of clothing and all kinds of utensils that brides would bring into a marriage.
We're talking about beyond just the Jewish society there, but this whole world of
Absolutely.
This town.
I mean, you know, these documents pertain to the Jewish community, but it seems very reasonable to think that the same things would have held more or less for Muslims and Christians and others as well. But what's amazing about Guettine's undertaking is that from what would seem to be these kind of dry, dusty scraps, he was able to create this incredibly vivid portrait of an entire world.
Guettine gave importance to the mundane documents, not just the important biblical manuscripts. But buried in the Geniza was what you call some of the best of the Golden Age of Hebrew literature in Spain. Mm-hmm. How did that wind up in Cairo?
Well, poetry was the primary mode of expression in those days, and it was in demand throughout the Jewish world, all around the Mediterranean, again, as far as Yemen and India. And so basically, you know, follow the money, follow the trade routes. Books were shipped along the trade routes, hand-copied books, and people were hungry to read the best poetry being written in the Hebrew world at that time, which was coming from Spain. So, for example, one of the really amazing things that the Geniza gives us in terms of poetry is the only poem written by a woman in the entire Hebrew canon of medieval literature. And it was discovered in the Geniza in two parts. It was a manuscript that had been ripped in half. And for many, many years, scholars only had the left half. And it had the poet's name in an Arabic heading. His name was Dunash. And they printed the fragment that they had, which was, they assumed, about a wedding. And then 40 years later, in the 1970s, a scholar going through papers from the Geniza saw what he recognized as the other half of this manuscript, put them together, and lo and behold, they fit perfectly. And it wasn't a poem by Dunash. It was a poem that the heading said by the wife of Dunash. And it wasn't about a wedding. It was about a separation. And the woman had her child in her arms, and the husband had to leave Spain. And it's not only the only poem by a woman. It's a beautiful poem and one of the most powerful poems written in the early period.
Can anyone visit the Ganache now?
The Geniza is the Geniza at some – well, it depends what you mean by the Geniza. The actual room that held the materials of the Geniza, well, we did – we actually went there. We did visit it. It's closed to tourists, the upper story where the Geniza is, but we managed to talk our way in, and we got a ladder, and we climbed up, and that was very exciting. But the fact is it's an empty room. The Geniza itself really is held in these incredible collections all over the world, you know, at Cambridge, at the Jewish Theological Seminary in New York, at Oxford. And, you know, and there's also, we should say now, there's a whole new sort of, 21st century dimension to this, because the manuscripts are all being digitized. And there is a major project called the Friedberg Geniza Project, which aims to put the entire Geniza essentially in the cloud, as it were. Yeah. And not just the actual manuscripts in incredibly vivid, digitized, high-resolution pictures, but also all of the bibliographical material and all of the catalogs, so that this will be a resource that scholars all over the world will be able to make just incredible use of.
And at the end of the book, you say there's so much material here that there could be two or three more volumes to this book alone. So you had to pick and choose,
We had to pick and choose.
But as they say, one man's trash is another man's treasure. And there was a lot of treasure in this Geniza. Adina Huffman and Peter Cole, their book, Sacred Trash, The Lost and Found World of the Cairo Geniza, published by Shocken Books. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.